Welcome to Episode 8 of Tech Talk Guys with Bill and Joe. Today we're talking about the Apple iPad and our favorite apps. Okay, welcome to Tech Talk Guys, Episode 8.
A year later.
Hi, Joe. A year later. The last time we recorded a podcast was April 13th of 2009. I think you were over here at my house,
weren't
you, Joe?
Yes, we were. That was our last collaboration.
So, a lot's happened since then. We have done what? I have moved
to Baltimore, Maryland from Chesterfield, Virginia.
I have not moved. I've stayed in Richmond.
But on the tech side, of course, a year is a huge amount of time to transpire. And, of course, one of the biggest additions to the consumer market by Apple, since we seem to have a trend to talk about Apple products way in advance before they come out. I remember one of our first podcasts was about the possible iPhone release, and then of course the iPhone came out. But now we have the iPad, which has become very ubiquitous.
So you got your hands on one before I
did.
Tell us about that experience.
I had to get over the whole, it's just a gigantic iPod Touch sort of thing. Feels like a gigantic iPhone.
Now, how long did that take?
It did not take long once I started to see how some of the apps were able to utilize the expanded screen estate, and then the kind of real, no pun intended, but hands-on way of interacting with the internet through the Safari browser. And it's with the new A4 processor that it had in there. And I think really that was probably the most ignored part of this, is that this device is until the iPhone 4 came out most recently, but this is the first device in a long time to have a 100% Apple-produced processor.
Probably the first time ever, right?
Yeah, that's true, actually. G4s, G5s were, was it a Motorola?
Motorola. Yeah. Yeah, combination PowerPC, IBM project.
Yeah, right? Yeah, and so by having the ability to really, really build their infrastructure from the semiconductor silicon level all the way up through the apps and through the iOS and everything, it's a very, very well put together device. Barring some minor things, obviously everybody wanted like a camera and SD slots and stuff, but
And Flash.
Yeah, Flash. Of course, there was a bevy of, you know, I saw a t-shirt with Flash Gordon laying dead with an apple in his hand because Flash is dead, according to that. And then there was a big debacle between Adobe and Flash. But overall, the device is wonderful. And as more and more apps are being developed for it with that screen estate in mind, it's just become a very, very nice one. I'm hoping to get my hands on one more permanently here within the next few weeks.
Well, my first introduction to it was at the Apple Store in Richmond, the weekend of the launch. So I sat down and played with it for about 10 minutes. It took me all of about 5 minutes to realize how much of an advancement this really was. I think the first app that really caught my eye was the Keynote app, the ability to do presentations in that format, and then be able to use a VGA adapter to come out the back and have a great on-the-road experience. You know, typically when salesmen go out, they have to carry a laptop, sometimes they have to carry a projector, but now you could do all of your presentations right on the iPad. That was the first eye-opener for me. And then once I actually had one to work with, the Evernote app was wonderful. Really a nice, polished, took full advantage of the iPad experience kind of app.
Yeah, Evernote in and of itself has become an extremely useful platform. Extremely useful app because of its ability to be on multiple platforms. I, for example, have an iPod Touch at the moment, a HTC Evo 4G, which is an Android phone, and they synchronize between both of them and synchronize with the web client and will synchronize with the iPad. And it's and you had told me about Evernote a long time ago when it was first kind of coming out, and it really is this neat way of kind of having a digital space for all your thoughts and everything. And now, and you shared with me this Evernote Trunk, which is kind of a back storage for several different apps. So now I was just looking at a few of them, Seismic and a couple other social media sort of things. Instead of just favoriting or bookmarking, you can actually back up those apps and share them with Evernote, and then it's synced elsewhere in their little cloud space.
Yeah, it's actually a very powerful tool. I have 581 notes in it now. Now, I went ahead and paid for the annual subscription, so it would give me a more secure experience and the ability to do the image processing a little quicker.
I see.
Well, let's talk about iPad apps for a minute. What's on your list of favorite apps?
Well, let me pull them up right now. The one that you shared with me that's still my favorite way to consume media is the Air Video app, which Air Video basically consists of a server that runs on my computer and then the app that runs on my iPod Touch or the iPad and allows me to live convert any video that I have on my computer so that I can stream it. Because one of the most difficult things with the iPad, or, well, I shouldn't say iPad, any product in general, is their limitations on video formats or just formats that can be read anyway. And converting them, it takes a long time. You end up with redundant files. And so now with Air Video, just it streams it on the fly, and it's just very, very well done and looks wonderful.
Yeah, it's a great app. I have the server on a quad-core box, and once you click on a video to watch, it takes less than 30 seconds for the stream to start. So I'm really happy about it.
Another one, again, being a video junkie, is the Netflix app. You know, I just finally got on the bandwagon of Netflix because I also did get a Vizio internet-enabled television that has the Netflix apps and all built into it. So I had to take advantage of it. But being able to stream and control my queue and everything from that Netflix app, and it looks really nice on it. There's definitely something to be said about the iPad being the end-all for consuming media.
Well, I think what's going to happen is it's going to bring design back to the forefront. If you look at the number of polished apps that are out there, Flipboard is one we've talked about that just launched yesterday. Had a hard time logging into it. It took me, about 5 or 6 hours of trying to set up my Facebook and my Twitter account on Flipboard. Really enjoying it, though. It definitely changes the experience of Facebook. It looks like a newspaper or a magazine instead of just regular old text on a web browser screen.
Now, at the same time, though, there are some concerns about the way Flipboard basically scrapes the data from the sites. So it's not pulling it from a syndication. It's, you know, actually copying it. So I'm really hoping that everything will work out there well and they won't get any sort of copyright infringement issues, which is what people are murmuring about at the moment. But it does look very, very nice. And I think that's kind of where media needs to be as far as kind of the digital magazines and things like that. I've heard the Popular Science app is supposed to be very pretty. I haven't even had a chance to take it out.
No, I don't have PopSci on this. I don't have Wired on this. I actually get the magazine and enjoy the tactile response of flipping pages and things. Ironically, I'm reading most of my books in the Kindle app reader now on the iPad, so it's kind of funny. I think it's because Wired is such a graphical magazine. The print quality is so good. They use good heavy paper, full color on every page. I think that would get lost on the iPad a little bit. I don't know. Maybe I'll change my mind in the future.
Sure. But even then, what you just mentioned about reading books on the Kindle, you know, we'll have a link here, but Gizmodo put an article up that Amazon reports that paper books were surpassed by EPUB as a format. And one thing that I found interesting is both by Barnes & Noble and by Amazon, their hardware, of course, they have the Kindle for Amazon and the Nook for Barnes & Noble, but their hardware side and the app side were completely separate departments. That way, The iPad has the advantage of giving me both the Barnes & Noble library as well as the Amazon library as well as the iBooks bookstore from Apple, which allows me to read many, many different formats in just one device. So, you know, instead of having to think about a Nook for one and a Kindle for another and all, now I can get the iPad and I can run that app for whichever bookstore I'd like.
Yeah. And the ability to sync across multiple devices in the Kindle app is amazing. You can read a section on the iPad and then switch and read something on your iPhone, and keeps everything in sync. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I know as far as the education space is coming, more and more textbook publishers are realizing that they're going to be able to save themselves big dollars by publishing the EPUB rather than the traditional format where they have to print a cachet of textbook hard copies and then try to sell them. And if they don't sell, then they're stuck with stacks and stacks of basically paper. Whereas now with the EPUB format, they can push it out there and, you know, it's in the ether.
Yeah. Cost of distribution just falls to the floor. Let's see. What else is on my list of favorite iPad apps? Starwalk, which is one that got a lot of press when it came out. You know, it uses the GPS and the compass to show you the constellations in the sky, and you can click on a certain star and pull up detailed information about it. That's a really fun app.
You know, something else is gaming. I'm seeing several high quality games coming to the iPad, coming to even the iPhones, with the modern combat and all. There's some pretty powerful 3D rendering that can actually be done in there. Real HD Racing was another one that I was very, very surprised with. I wasn't too sure how I'd feel about tilting the iPad as a steering wheel, but it did a really, really nice job. And, yeah, so I mean, I think that's going to be another whole realm as far as it not just appealing to the adult reader or media consumer or news consumer, even for those teenage college individuals who want to have a different sort of gaming platform as well as an internet tablet. I mean, a mini computer really is this gaming front that's now available through the iPad with that larger screen.
Yeah, Real Racing HD is a great game. You know, it's going to sound silly, but the game I play most on the iPad is Boggle.
Really?
The old-fashioned 4x4 grid of shaken up letters. Yeah, it's a quick game. You can play a round in 3 minutes.
Then, of course, there's the Scrabble, which the power of that is if I have people with iPhones or iPod Touches and they have the app as well, then their own personal device acts as the letter tray, and then they basically can throw the letters and throw the word up onto the iPad, which acts as the overall surface. And so that's going to create some very neat multiplayer, multi-user sort of experiences in the gaming and even possibly in other ways as well.
Well, I have a friend who has jailbroke his iPad, and he loaded on a Nintendo 64 SNES emulator. And the controllers are on the jailbroken iPhones. Ooh. So you can actually play all the ROMs on the iPad display and use the iPhone as the controller.
Oh, I think I know what I'm going to do when I get my iPad.
Yeah, he was quite excited when he demoed it for me. I let him down a little bit by saying, yeah, I didn't really have an SNES when I was a kid. Matter of fact, I was going off to college, so I skipped that whole platform. Wasn't as exciting.
Sure, sure.
Another app that's kind of fun is Adobe Ideas. It's an app where you can draw on the iPad, but it's more for business than for like actual painting or anything like that. One of the nice features is you can take a screen capture on an iPad just like you can on an iPhone by holding down the power and the home button quickly. And then once you take that screenshot, you can load it in Adobe Ideas, and you can draw right on top of it. And then save that and email that image to somebody else. So it's nice for annotating.
Okay, so that's what I was going to ask. So it's kind of this annotation over websites, because it's basically a screenshot anywhere is what you're saying, right? Okay, excellent.
I'm trying to see if I have anything else fun on my iPad here.
Flipping through and checking my own.
Well, I'll tell you one app that I use quite often is the Weatherbug app. Now, I know on a PC, Weatherbug was such a nuisance. It was almost like spyware. But they've done a really good job on their app. You really don't even need to watch the news for weather anymore. The Weatherbug app will show you real-time radar for wherever you are. And you can zoom in specifically down to where you are, or you can zoom out and see the whole country. It also will allow you to put the map in motion, and you can see everything, how it's slowly moving across the country.
That's a Weatherbug one. Okay, I'm going to have to check on that one too.
Now, one thing I am a little surprised about, why didn't Apple put a clock on the iPad?
That's a very good question. In fact, you know, that's one that I didn't even mention, but I did actually have to get a desk clock iPad app. I'm trying to find the exact name of this one. It even has weather on it as well, but it seems like
the time is 2:46 a.m.
Yeah, that's the time of recording.
Now that is an iPad talking clock.
What's the name of that one?
The Touch LCD Designer Speaking Clock.
See it. I got it. I'm adding these to my collection so that when I get it, I can just think.
See, Urban Spoon is a great app, whether it's on the iPhone or the iPad. It's an amazing way to find great places to eat.
Definitely.
I love the ability to shake it, and it randomly picks a restaurant for you.
I will say, bit of a comic book geek myself. And so some of these comic book apps, they're free to download, but then you just buy the comics. It's also really, really beautiful to see, how something so graphical. I mean, you had mentioned how, you know, the Wired magazine has a lot of graphical content, and of course the print quality adds a tactile feel to it. But with those comics, just having those images really depicted well, it's very neat the way the story can progress from cell to cell and frame to frame, and how they kind of capture it. And there's a slight degree of animation when you kind of move through the comics with those comic apps. And I think Marvel and DC are doing those. It's tripping me out because I'm thinking about what the next generation's going to – how they consume their media. Because, I mean, I still have my stacks of comic books or whatever. But I remember as that slow transition went to the computer age and, you know, how I consumed internet. You know, I mean, and Bill, you know, we went from Telnet, which was all monochrome text, BBS, multi-user yeah. dungeons and things, to now – you know, Mozilla and Netscape, to what we have now with HTML5 and immersive 3D and all just built off of code. And these children, i.e. Livy, for example, has, you know, they grow up with iPods and iPads, and they're going to have this touch interface everywhere.
Yeah, Livy already knows how to use a touch interface. She's 2.5 years old now. But we were sitting at dinner one night. She was about 1.5. And my wife and I routinely put Sesame Street videos on the iPhone so she can watch Sesame Street while we're eating. It gives us a nice little distraction, or gives Olivia a nice little distraction. So we were sitting there one night at this restaurant, and next thing you know, Olivia picks up the iPhone and she's going through an app. And I looked at my wife and said, "Beck, did you put that flashcard app on for Olivia?" And she said, "No, I didn't do it." So I got the iPhone from Olivia, put it back on the video, set it down in front of her. She picked it up, hit the home button, scrolled over 2 full screens of icons, clicked on the iTot Cards app, selected which group she wanted to look at, and she started swiping her finger through the different flashcards at 1.5 years old. Now what's interesting is she doesn't get the fact that laptops don't have a touch interface, or the HDTV doesn't have a touch screen interface. And she actually will get mad at these devices because they do not work the way she thinks they should. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. We'll actually put a link to an article in the New York Times talking about micro generations that are coming. Kids like my daughter who have never known a world of really a mouse and a keyboard, but have grown up with a touch interface. It's going to be a separate sub-generation inside of the broader generation that she's a part of. So now instead of, you know, defining generations like X and Y and the millennials, now there's going to be even subgroups underneath of that for when they come to know technology.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, even just the prevalence of internet connectivity is... I mean, just closing the borders of data and knowledge to nothing, and then the speed of it, the bandwidth is the other thing. This, because now high definition video streaming again, like, you know, with the Netflix or ABC or you know, even the World Cup was a very good test of how more people were consuming the World Cup via the internet through ESPN and different sites like that, you know, even internationally, than they were of actually watching the traditional broadcast.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, talk about evolution in the app development. The Wall Street Journal app has been a nice app. One of the things that was a little annoying about it is when you clicked on it to go to today's app, you would sit there and it would download and download and download, and it wouldn't actually let you see anything. Well, they've now modified the app that it immediately takes you to the home page without having to wait for all the loading to happen for all the other sections. So it's nice to see evolution already occurring in the iPad arena.
Yeah, it's just the way these apps are now becoming so ubiquitous, to the fact that a company or whatever, I mean, they have to have an app for it. I mean, even my local news Fox syndicate TV station has an app for the iPhone. And I think that just these little tiny tiles, you know, I'm sitting here looking at my iTunes and all these little tiles of all these different apps that I have installed on my iPod and iPad. They're kind of representative of, you know, it's like, oh, what app do you have? What's a good app that you have? So these little pockets of code, of software, is more of where people want to go instead of kind of your, you know, Microsoft Office suite and Photoshop CS5. I mean, I'm sure there, of course, is still a market for that. But I think the general consumer now, they just want these little 99 cents, $2.99 sort of apps and games now. And that's created a whole new market, both for Apple and for Android. Well, Palm's not really in the game as much right now. But, you know, I can see that these little mini pockets is where people want to consume their data and interact with their devices.
One of the things that's interesting about that is as you move away from the browser experience, you're moving into silos of apps. And instead of being able to cut and paste between different apps, now you're in that app and you can only interact inside that app. You can't share the data around. So is that an advancement? Is that a refinement? Is it the community saying, no, we really want a highly polished interface just to interact with this one thing? We're not that concerned about interactivity with other apps. It's a kind of a question to ponder as we go forward.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, I can see that some people in the tech Nerati, for example, would say, well, you know, I want to be able to hit this button and on my New York Times app immediately be able to send it out on my Twitter for iPhone app, or, you know, TweetDeck, or publish it on my WordPress, and I should be able to move back and forth. And so, you know, the argument came up the other day with a friend of ours, you know, wanted to know whether he should get a MacBook Pro or an iPad. Now, they don't have a laptop. They have a desktop computer, but they don't have a laptop. And I told him, honestly, if you need that sort of multitasking and that flexibility, still go get a MacBook Pro. Like, the iPad is a wonderful device, but because of, just like you said, the silos of information and that inability to be able to move quickly back and forth, what they were trying to do still required a full-on computer. But I think if people come to the table understanding that an iPad or these mobile devices, you know, whatever the internet tablet could be, needs to realize that it is just going to be kind of this small little window, and just slight, some of them can move back and forth, but not all of them have that integration built in, because you want the app to be efficient. You want the program to be efficient.
Now, one of the things that I'm curious about is, why is Apple waiting to release the iPad iOS 4 version this fall? They just released the iPhone 4. It has the new multitasking OS. Why isn't it available for the iPad? Are they going to be doing things in app development, or allowing things to be done with apps that allow more multitasking capability, more interoperability between the different apps?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the same thing I thought, because, I mean, as far as the infrastructure, it is the same A4 processor, similar setups, other than the screen size. And I wasn't sure why they were doing that, unless it is, just like you said, more interoperability with the iPhone 4 multitasking being brought to the table, then, you know, apps are able to run in the background kind of frozen in stasis. And so having that ability in your iPad would create some pretty neat opportunities to jump back and forth without having to hit the home button and then going back in to find the app, as well as folder management, because I know with the new iOS 4, that's probably my favorite thing. I mean, as many apps as I have, now I have one screen with just a bunch of different folders instead of 10 screens deep having to find a single thing.
I think my favorite feature of iOS 4 is now the ability to multitask, truly multitask. Right. I can use Skype now and let it run in the background. I receive a Skype call or a Skype message, and that's new and that's fun and that's exciting. Well, it's 2:57 a.m. I think we ought to wrap up this edition. I would propose, Joe, that maybe on our next one we talk about the iPhone 4, which I have, and the Evo, which
sure,
you have.
Sounds good.
And we can compare and contrast and see where they're similar and talk about the apps and ways we
Excellent.
Might use it.
Oh, and now here's the only thing, though, Bill. We have to make sure that it's not next year by the time we do that next bond game.
No. Not another year.
We can definitely do it now.
We can do it now. We've spent almost 5 hours figuring out how to record on the Apple.
Yeah, the prep work alone for this show could have been its own show, but gladly we got it all set up, so we'll be ready to rock and roll soon.
Okay, well, thanks for listening to another episode of Tech Talk Guys with Bill and Joe, or Joe and Bill, or whatever way you want to do it. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm really tired.
Good night.
If you have any questions, suggestions, or comments, please email us at info@techtalkguys.com. Please check out our website at www.techtalkguys.com.